Hey guys, welcome to Sports Spectrum. So excited for today's conversation with Brent Dearman, North Alabama head football coach. He's got a great heart for the Lord, for discipleship. Christ is really involved in his life in a way that he carries with him to the football field. He keeps it at home, and it's something he learned from his dad, who was a coach for many years, but also a devout follower of Jesus. I love Brent Dearman. This guy is amazing. He was at Auburn back in 2013, 2014 as an analyst under Gus Malzahn and learned so much from him, and then had stops at Kansas, Middle Tennessee, Florida Atlantic. He's an OC by trade there. He was also a head coach at his alma mater at Bethel, where he won a lot of games as a player and then his one season as a coach. And now he's the head man for the FCS school in North Alabama. And there was a lot we talked about as far as discipleship, as far as gratitude, as far as identity, as far as carrying himself. I loved this conversation. I think you're going to love it too with Brent Dearman. It's coming up in just a moment. First, reminding you about our Sports Spectrum magazine. Go to sportspectrum.com. You can subscribe right now. And it's really the best thing that we do, I think, as far as something that is faith-filled, family-friendly, clean content. We talk a little bit about keeping our mouths clean as we coach, as we parent with Brent Dearman. But with the magazine, that's what we try to do. We want to make this magazine appealing to everyone. It's perfect for kids who love sports and you want to introduce them to the gospel and to some athletes and coaches who are doing it the right way, following Jesus. Subscribe today to thesportsspectrum.com. You can get a one-year subscription right at the website. And when you check out, make sure you use the code podcast15, podcast15, which gives you exclusive 15% off bonus to the magazine subscription. It's already very affordable, but just want to give you a little podcast exclusive discount, if you will, 15% off a one-year subscription. You can subscribe today right now. I highly recommend it. Don't wait. Go check it out at sportsspectrum.com. Well, it's great to have you here on the show, Coach Dearman. Let's start with Christ. That's always the most important thing, I think, whenever we have conversations like this on Sports Spectrum. So tell me about the Lord in your life and who Jesus is to Brent Dearman.
You know, first off, Jesus is everything. Jesus is my Savior. Jesus came. You know, I actually shared this verse with our players this week, is the things you go through as a football player, I try not to compare Christ so much with us, because there's no comparison to what he did. But the Bible says in Hebrews that he endured the cross. He endured the pain for the joy that was in front of him. And I view it as the joy was him bringing us salvation. The joy is the opportunity of us being in heaven with him. So he endured it for us. And we're so thankful for what he did. And just a little bit of background on me, my dad and mom, I grew up in the Pentecostal church.
Yeah,
I was at church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night. My dad was a deacon in our church, but also my dad was an O-line coach. So I had faith in football my entire life. So Jesus to me is really everything.
Was there a moment growing up in the family that goes to church? You know, you're kind of indoctrinated into it from an early age, but was there a moment when you had to make that choice for yourself and decide, I'm all in? Did you have that?
You know, I don't think so, because I kind of wonder that sometimes what it's like for maybe some of my players, what it's like for others that they didn't have that experience. For me, that's really all I knew. So, you know, I got saved at an early age, and I never had that moment. I think I was like 10 years old when I made that decision. And, you know, at 10, you kind of think you know things, but you don't. But I never had a moment where I felt any different. So it's different for me than probably a lot of other people. But because of how awesome my parents were of making sure I was always there, I've been raised in it, and that's really all I know.
Did you ever have an identity crisis? You talk about faith in football always being sort of in your family with your dad as a coach, and certainly being in church. But as you got older and as you started to have some success as a player, did you start to see a little bit of a shift and maybe lose that identity a little bit more into football than to God?
I tell you what, my freshman and a little bit into my sophomore years of college, what happens is I went off and I was about 6.5 hours away from home. I played a little small NAI school, Bethel,
yeah,
in Tennessee,
sure,
which is actually a Christian university. But when I left home, I didn't get plugged into a church. I didn't get plugged into a family of believers there. So my first year, I'd sleep in on Sundays and didn't go to a Wednesday night, wasn't involved in FCA, and just tried to do it on my own. And what I realized is I needed it. And I ended up going into my sophomore year. I find a local church. I get involved with FCA. And it's really the first time being away, and where mom and dad would always make sure that I was in church on Sunday morning, where I'd ride to church with them, or I'd be involved in my youth group that I grew up in. And now when I go off, I got to find something new. And I sat in my room. And so that was really the biggest moment in my life where I kind of didn't run away from God, but I wasn't doing the things that I was used to. And I probably struggled more spiritually that year than I did any other year. So just, that's a big thing that we try to do with our players here. We're going back to my experiences in fall camp early on that first year. We really, and we try to visit different churches, because I grew up in the Pentecostal church. You know, this is a big area for Church of Christ and Southern Baptist churches, as I'm sure you can imagine. So we try to take them to different churches so they can experience what's home for them. So they don't go through that first year vibe that I went through.
We're talking to Brent Dierman here on Sports Spectrum from North Alabama. When does coaching for you come into the picture? Because you had a really good collegiate career at Bethel and broke a bunch of school records and won a bunch of games. But at some point, that shift has to take place where you're going all in as a coach. Does that happen while you're in school?
My first year, I went to school when I was doing what a lot of freshmen in college do, and you're chasing jobs for money. And I thought I was going to be a radiologist.
Radiologist.
I said, you know what? I'm going to chase this medical field deal. I'm going to, so I can make just a lot of money. I have lights in my office, so every now and then, if I don't move enough, the lights turn off for the sensors. But I was chasing money, and I figured out pretty quickly I did not like science. And about my going into my sophomore year, decided to change my major, and I was really good at math. So I get my math degree because my dad told me you could teach and coach anywhere with a math degree. Everybody's always looking for math qualified coaches. So I get my math degree, and I made the decision then, I'm going to go into coaching. I was just going to be a high school coach. I said, I'm going to follow in the footsteps of my dad. I love ball, which I'm sure we'll get into at some point in this conversation of how sometimes we find our identity through football.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really me at that moment in time. That's all I knew. I grew up in church, and I grew up in a football family. So I had to be good at one or the other. I didn't want to go into the ministry, didn't want to be and go that way. So I felt like the Lord was pulling me where my ministry was impacting the lives of kids. So after I got done playing, I stayed on one more semester so I could finish my degree, and was a student assistant coach, still on scholarship, and loved the preparation, loved the film breakdown, loved the impact that I was able to have on kids. And I made the decision then that this is a career I want to pursue, and I haven't looked back once. I told my wife actually this morning that I enjoy, this is not a job, this is something I enjoy doing. She gets mad at me sometimes in these snow days of why are you so eager to leave and go to work? And I said, you know, I love my job. I love my family. Don't take that away from me, but I also love the impact that I'm able to have on 120 kids every day. So I'd say I'd never thought about doing anything else but coaching after that freshman year of college.
You went to high school and coached in the high school ranks into your late 20s. And then suddenly, as I'm doing my research and I see you get a call somehow from Gus Malzahn and Auburn, and you end up there. Take me through that opportunity and what it meant to you as you look back on your coaching career and the journey you've been on.
You know, every step I know the Lord has planned out in front of me. And you talk about a huge step right there where I go from, I spent 5 years in high school coaching. My first three, I'm an assistant, Had a lot of success at a high school down in Mobile, Alabama, which leads me to getting a head job at 26 years old. Thought I knew all the answers to the world at 26. Those 2 years as a head coach probably was the two toughest years of my life. We go 2-8 and 3-7 of building a young inner city program and just get a random call one day and come to find out my former boss at the previous school, Coach Malzahn's trying to get a foothold in the state of Alabama, and he wanted to hire some high school coaches, one from Birmingham, one from Mobile, and one was from Columbus, Georgia. And the three high school coaches he hires that year was Chip Lindsey. Chip is now the offense coordinator at North Carolina, has been the head coach at Troy, but Gus gave him his first opportunity there. He hires a guy named Dale McGee out of Columbus, Georgia, who's now the assistant head coach at Georgia and running backs coach, and Brent Dearman out of Mobile. And we were, the three of us were supposed to help with the relationship with high school coaches, which could in turn help with recruiting and getting players, because there was a guy named Nick Saban on the other side of the state that was killing it in recruiting.
Yeah, I've heard of him.
That's really, I figured a few of your listeners had heard of that guy. But that's really what opened the door for me. And I know it was all, I've never met Coach Malzahn. I never knew anybody really on the staff. And it was really the Lord opened up a door and put me in the building. And I tried to go and be a sponge. And because of that is really what led me to the next step in my life. But a huge opportunity for a high school coach to be able to have his first college coaching job at Auburn.
Yeah, how great is it too when you look at your journey? I tell people all the time, you never know God's plan for your life until you really look back. And then you start to see how he was orchestrating behind the scenes, whether you even knew it or not. How great is it to look back to 2013, that's what, a decade ago, and see how the Lord orchestrated that opportunity to take you on the path that you've been on?
Oh, it in the moment, you have no idea. In the moment, you question sometimes when you're in those valleys, when you get up to the pinnacle, you don't know what the next step's going to be. But my first year in high school coach, I won a state championship, go 15-0. And really that's the reason why it got me there. Cause I think 11 of the players that I coached off of that team ended up being Division I athletes. That's why I ended up in college coaching. And then my first year in college coaching, the miracle tip pass in Jordan Hare against Georgia. 2 weeks later, we have the kick six, which is quite possibly the most memorable play in college football history, yeah. Except for maybe the band on the field with Stanford, something like that. But and then be 13 seconds away from a national championship. And me thinking, man, this is what it's going to be like every year. No, it's not. It's not like that every year. And but to see the valleys and the highs that the Lord's brought me through has prepared me for the next job, or it's prepared me for jobs two jobs down the road. So it's been an incredible journey, and I'm still writing I'm hoping I'm still towards the beginning of the journey than I am towards the end of the journey, but it's been a fun ride for sure.
Yeah, no, that's awesome to hear. And certainly after Auburn, you know, a bunch of different stops and stops at Kansas and Middle Tennessee, Florida Atlantic, and then comes North Alabama and a chance for you to become a head coach on the Division I level. Why was North Alabama the right yes from God for you and your family?
I'll tell you where I was at is, and it wasn't anything against anybody in my journey. When I was at, you know, I leave Auburn and I go to Arkansas Tech, where a lot of people don't know about Arkansas Tech. Arkansas Tech's a Division II school, but I was an off-the-field guy. I was an analyst. I wanted to make a name for myself, so I took a job as an OC so I could call it, so I could make a name for myself. And that's what I encourage some of these high school guys sometimes is, man, y'all just see that I was at Auburn. You just see that I was at Middle Tennessee. You don't see the 3 years I spent in D2 football, the 3 years that really refined me as a play caller is when I got to go do it on my own. And that leads me to my alma mater at Bethel being the head coach in McKenzie, Tennessee, a population of 2,500 people. And then that opens the door for me somehow to get on at Kansas with Les Miles and to help build what Coach Leipold now has taken at an even higher level. And all of that led me to Middle Tennessee, to FAU. Well, I'm at FAU. My son's 11 years old. My son's starting to play flag football. I think he plays like 14 flag football games. I made 7 of them. And it crushes me. And a lot of people that are in this profession that we choose understand that there's so many sacrifices we make sometimes. And when you work for someone else, and what I figured out, the higher you go up in this in division ranks, recruiting is 24/7. If you're not game planning, you're making phone calls to recruits, you're making calls to their handlers, you're talking to their high school coach. So I told my wife at that moment in time, I said, you know what, it's nothing against anybody here at FAU, it's nothing against anybody that I've worked for in the past, but if I can get a chance to be a head coach again, I don't care what the pay is, I'm going to be a head coach because I get to decide when I see my kids. Mm. I get to decide if my kids get to come to practice every day. I get to decide if my kids come on the trips, on road trips. I get to decide what kind of environment we build where families come to practice. And I said, I'm tired of missing out on being a dad. I don't want to look back and miss out on being a father and being a husband. And then this job opens in the middle of me struggling, in the middle of me hurting. It really hit me. We were on a bye week at FAU, and I'm all over the country recruiting quarterbacks. And I call a great buddy of mine, Rick Jones, is basically like a assistant head coach kind of figure at Missouri. Former high school coach, great. I call him while I'm driving on the road and say, Coach, I'm struggling. And he said to me, he said, how old's your son? I said, he's 11. He said, think of it like this. In 7 years, you're going to be moving him out of your house to go to college. Yeah. You have 7 years left to affect his life. And man, that conversation I had with Coach just really changed me. And then about a week later is when this job came open. And it's back in my home state. It's at the FCS level, where I know I don't have to stay in contact with this five-star kid 24/7 for the next 3 years of his life. And I get to actually have contact with my 3 five-star kids every day of their lives. And that's really what led me back here and getting back into state. I've got 7 years in state retirement from being a high school coach and being at Auburn. So now I can get back in the retirement system. So there's so many different things that made this the perfect job for me.
That's great. Tell me about what it means to raise the roar, which I've seen is the moniker, if you will, for North Alabama.
Absolutely. I think that was a vision before me. Our AD, this place has always said Roar Lions was kind of their chant. And especially in football had kind of, as they made the transition from D2 up to the FCS level, multiple national championships at the D2 level, was a D2 powerhouse. In the 90s, other sports have won D2 national championships. So as they were going from D2 up to FCS, it kind of became the slogan that we're going to raise the roar. We've always been Roar Lions. Well, how can we step it up a notch as we take it from D2 to FCS? And that's really where the motto or the rally cry kind of went to is raise the roar. Let's pick it up a level as we move up.
Brent Dierman's with us here on Sports Spectrum from North Alabama. So this past season was your first there. Not the winning season that you would hope, but God always teaches us things, and there's always great lessons in a season, whether you win a lot, whether you lose a lot, or anywhere in between. What did you learn from this first season at North Alabama from God?
You know, what I really challenged our staff and our players at the end of the year is, you know, we came in and we took over a team that was 1-10. We took over a team that their one win was a Division II win. So they were really 0-10 at FCS or higher level. And where we want to say, you know, we want to win the conference. We want to have a winning season. At the end of the day, we showed growth. And if we continue to show growth in everything we do, we continue moving forward, that's how we're going to be judged. And to go from 0 wins to 3, you know, you look on it and it doesn't really fire you up looking at a 3-18, but now look at it in perspective. And 2 of the wins we got last year were teams that beat this program by 2 or 3 touchdowns or more the previous year. We lose to our conference champions by a single possession. We lose to a, we beat a playoff team that goes to the second round of the playoffs. and then to cap the year off at the end of the year where you play a Florida State team and get a lot of attention because we play on a national spotlight, and it's 24-13 at halftime against a number three team in the country at that moment in time. Unfortunately, people remember that for the injury to the quarterback, but our guys played their tails off for a half, and then the talent difference probably takes over more in the second half. But man, that I look at it, it's growth. And now I say, all right, now we need to double that. We went from one win to three wins. Now let's continue to show that exponential growth as we move forward. So at the end of the year, I was probably saddened, but as I was able to sit down and really assess and look in the mirror, there's things that we got to get better at, but also, man, I was excited for our staff and our players to see that growth that we showed this past year.
And that's transferable to your faith, I have to imagine. You know, the growth perspective is really, I feel like, what Christ wants us in a relationship with Him to do every day.
Absolutely. It every day we try to show our players how the game of football so much shows you about life. It shows you about your walk with the Lord. It shows you about how you can be a better son, how I can be a better friend, how I'll be a better leader. That every play, you're not going to be perfect. I'm not going to do things right. I'm not going to win every play. At the end of the day, it's a one-on-one battle with another man. And my spiritual walk, I got a one-on-one battle with my flesh. I got a one-on-one battle with the devil that I'm not going to always win, but you need to win more than you lose. And you got to be able to look yourself in the mirror and say, you know what? I went to war today. And I fought today. I'm beat up, but I'm still walking. And I think that's a great message to kind of share with our players, not just in football, but in life and in your spiritual walk for sure.
How important is Christ in your life determining and helping the way that you coach your kids, your staff, football?
Oh, it's huge. I get in trouble all the time, Jason, because the church I go to is a big church. We know Ren
Aaron,
Church of the Highlands, and yeah. I get in trouble because I write down my notes on Sunday morning. And I'm gonna be honest with you, Sunday mornings is the worst time to have church for football coaches because you just played a game the day before. So I'm usually in worship. I got my hands up. I'm singing, but I'm really not thinking about what I'm singing. I'm thinking about that power play where the guard didn't pull the right way.
Yeah.
And so often I'm writing notes down. My wife says, what note are you writing down? When realistically I'm writing something down to tell my team where, man, I like that. What the pastor said, I'm going to share that message with my team, or where I don't always use it for myself, where I think we try to do such a good job of raising our players like we do our own children. And that's kind of been my challenge to my staff with children is, hey, don't neglect your own children. We spend so much time plugging and sowing seeds into other people's children. Let's make sure we're sowing seeds in our own children as we do this. But man, I pray about it. We pray as a staff. We go through devotionals as a staff. We go through devotionals with our players. We do a Friday night devotional during the season. We were blessed enough that Campus Crusade led. We had three players this fall get baptized on the field in horse troughs. We bring in pastors to talk to our players. We do everything we can to let the Lord lead our program.
I love that. I think there's a lot of coaches listening, though, who've been through it and say, how do you do that? Like, how do you create a culture of Christ first in a program where there's going to be people who maybe don't believe the same thing you believe, or come in very unchurched, or come in, from a different background or whatever it might be, and they're struggling with that? What would you say to those coaches that are saying, man, how do you implement this?
So what we've done is we try to protect ourselves in the process of this too, because at the end of the day, I can be a believer, but I also got to make sure that I'm smart or I don't jeopardize my job and my family, and take care of my family. So, in fall camp, for example, I can push it to the university that we're saving money budget wise by taking the team to voluntary church services on Sunday. And usually, those older ladies at church love cooking. So yes. We get a free meal. We get a free lunch out of it. So that's one way that we're able to do it is we say, all right, it's a voluntary church service. We're not saying you have to go. but I'm going to get a free fried chicken and green beans and mashed potatoes. And you find out that 80% of your team shows up. All right. So you're not making that mandatory. The next thing we do is our Bible studies, where our players are led through Campus Crusade, where it's not led through our actual staff. Our staff goes and attends, but we pass it over to them, where they their ministry leads it instead of us saying that we lead it. We've done a class in the spring. We called it a manhood class, where the principles behind the manhood class went all the way back to Genesis, where God instructed his first commandment. His first instruction was to fill the earth, multiply, and subdue it. And we talked about, what does that mean? Now, did I get up in front of them and say, here's the verse, Genesis, this. No, I said, you know what, guys, my job is to fill the earth. What does fill the earth mean? What does multiply mean? Multiply means not to just add to something, but to have exponential growth. Well, how can I have exponential growth? And then to subdue the earth means to conquer. Or how can we conquer? And so we kind of do it in ways that we protect ourselves when it's us leading it, but then we turn it over so often to voluntary things where pastors or Campus Crusade or things like that come in and do it. Now, staff-wise, as the head coach, the great thing about being the head coach is I get to hire. So I hire people that I know. I hire people that are equally yoked, is how the Bible puts it. And, yeah. And I love working with people that I can say I'm equally yoked with. So when I come in that 8 o'clock meeting and I start praying, I know that they're praying with me. I know that we're that devotional book that we're going through, I know everybody's on the same page with, because of us all being equally yoked, like I said. So those are some of the ways that we're able to do it here.
Yeah. And that's now, go ahead.
When I was at Bethel, as the head coach, I can openly do it.
It's a Christian school.
Being at the private Christian school. Now at the public university, we have to just be smart and safeguard and protect ourselves a little bit more.
Yeah. Where did you learn that? Does that come from little nuggets from Kansas and Middle Tennessee and Auburn? Like where did you kind of get that, a grasp on that?
Trial and error more than anything. So I've worked for, and I've never throw previous boss on the bus, but I've worked for some guys that tried to stay far from it. And some of them had reasons. Some of them had experiences where they worked for a guy that he may have gotten in trouble, or they've seen it themselves. So I understood it. I didn't say that I always agreed with, but I understood their position on it. I worked for other guys that just said, we're just solely going to leave this up to Campus Crusade. We're going to stay out of it. And to me, you know, I feel like if the Lord calls me to do it, the Lord's going to protect me at the same time. He's got a plan for me. And I try not to be, you know, Jonah got in trouble for not following where the Lord led him. So there's been a lot of prayer. And I've got a bunch of, especially my running back coach, for example, here is heavily involved in FCA, went to Lambeth, which is has some Hugh Freeze ties to him right there. Mm-hmm. With tons of another private Christian school. He went to seminary. So I lean on him a lot too and say, man, this is something the Lord's put on my heart. I want you to pray about it. I want you to tell me, let's get together. Let's see how we can plan this. Let's pray about it. Let's fast about it before we just jump into it. I'm a guy. I don't like to make spur of the moment decisions. I like to sleep on things, pray on things where it may come to me now. We may not implement it till the summer. But it's really more trial and error within the building than anything.
Does that ever come into play when you're recruiting, like just sharing, not necessarily saying I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that with your kid, obviously, but that this is who I am, that I'm a praying man, that I'm a follower of Christ. Does that come into the recruiting conversations ever?
100%. I think parents need to know everything about a program that they're stepping into, whether they like that or they don't like it. I don't want a kid to get here and say, man, this is not what I signed up for. I want them to know off the top what they're stepping into. So the first talk, usually in our recruiting weekends, that I get up and do is I say, hey, here's how we're going to develop your son. Here's the things that we're going to do to pour into your son if he decides to come here. here's the manhood class that we do in the spring. Here's our player development process. Here's what we do in fall camp by taking them to churches, by exposing them to the community. We're going to put them in front of community leaders by doing this, this, and this. We've got devotionals on Thursday nights. We've got Saturday morning devotionals. We're going to put your son in these environments if you guys decide to come here. And then here's also how we're going to coach him. I went my whole life. I've never heard my father, who's an O-line coach. I'm pretty sure, Jason, you've probably heard some O-line coaches. They are usually the most animated guy on the field.
Absolutely.
And you can be animated, but usually their animation is in negative, derogatory, cursing kids out. I went my whole life never hearing my father use a cuss word. And he was an O-line coach. And I tell parents, I do everything in my power. I'm going to be that way, and I'm going to do everything in my power to hire people that are going to be that way. We're going to sow positive seeds into your kids. I can yell at him, but I'm not going to be derogatory to him. I'm not going to cut him down. And more often than not, what I've even got to with our coach, I'm going to put my arm around him when he needs mentoring and when he's done something wrong. I'm going to shout and praise the good things, because I don't know about you, Jason, but I don't like people pointing out my mistakes with a bullhorn.
Yeah.
I like them with a bullhorn saying all the things I do good, but my mistakes, I like people whispering in my ear a little bit more often. So I tell them exactly how we're going to coach their kid when they're here.
Yeah, that's so hard. I don't know why it's hard, because I'm not a coach, but I just know from watching all environments of sports, not just college football, but professional football and baseball and hockey and basketball, coaching, there's so many. What you just described to me reminds me of Tony Dungy, Coach Dungy, who would talk about, I would never raise my voice in a negative way, tried never to curse and use any foul language, tried to carry myself in a way that represented Christ, but I was as intense and as tough as you could find in terms of how I wanted these guys to play well and to win. And obviously it worked. He's a Hall of Fame coach. But then you see the other side, and I'm not saying there's other coaching ways that don't work. Clearly you see some legendary coaches, but some of them are screaming and yelling. And, you know, if they're mic'd up, you might hear some language, and you might hear some screaming and yelling and pointing out the negative. What you just described sounds so hard in a culture that's built around, I don't know, macho toughness and using language to get your point across.
Absolutely. It is tough, and it's a daily battle. You know, we went back to how football teaches you so much in your spiritual walk.
Yeah.
But it is a daily battle, I'm constantly talking to my staff about it. I'm constantly saying, all right, guys, how can we do this better? We may have had an incident at practice. All right. And I'm not telling you we're perfect. But we're going to strive to be the best we can be for our players. And here's another rule that we do here that drives me nuts. If I go watch another team do practice, places I've been before where I wasn't the head coach at, same way I'm going to try to do with my kids, never have disagreements in front of the kids. And me and coaches, I've been at places where you got these ego-driven guys that coach this profession that they'll start fighting and yelling and screaming at each other on the field. And the kids are standing there watching it. And so for us, like with that, I just, one of our rules, we don't have disagreements in front of players. If I don't like the way you're coaching something, I may pull you aside during the water break and say, hey, let's not say that. Let's not do that. But they're never going to see me not unified with you guys. And the more unified we are as a staff, the more that we do things together. And I tell you what helps out with my coaches too. When my 10-year-old daughter's at practice, I hear a lot less, yelling and cursing. So I tell her, I get my 10-year-old daughter at practice more often, and it also helps with my players. My players look over there and they see her, that word that they're accustomed to possibly saying in bad moments turns into a different word. So, it's something that you got to train. It's not something that's easy. You got to continuously, train that habit.
Oh, it's hard. I used to curse like a sailor. I mean, I was terrible. I got saved when I was 27. And for me, in the first couple years of my walk with Christ, that was the hardest thing. And then I had a child. I have a daughter, one daughter. And I remember just saying, I want to be able to say anything to her in the same way that I'd say it to other people. And like you say, it was training, but I used to not curse, and I pretty much still don't today anywhere I go. And people have noticed and call me out. Hey, why don't you curse? And I'm like, well, if I can't say it in front of my daughter, I don't want to say it in front of everybody and in front of other people. I want to be the same person. And that's just me. I'm not putting anybody else under the bus, but I totally relate to what you're saying, Coach, about training. And obviously it's hard, and everybody makes mistakes and loses their temper and isn't perfect. But I tried to do that with my own daughter, not just anybody I'm coaching or a part of in ministry or anything like that, but just at home. Did you kind of carry that at home as well, where, hey, I don't want the kids to see mom and dad arguing or disagreeing, and I tried to carry myself in the same way that I would if I was coaching?
Absolutely, and that's why I led it off with, I went 42 years of watching my dad on the sideline never doing it.
Yeah.
I went at the house. If he didn't do it on the sideline, he definitely didn't do it at the house. I mean, the sideline's the hardest place where most of them would ever have come out. So that's how I was raised. So it's easier for me. And I also understand of having a little grace with people, that wasn't how they were raised. Mom and dad may have talked a little different, but that's not how we're training it to be here. We don't have a no nonsense policy because I think no nonsense policies are hard to discipline, but we have this is where our standard wants to be. And every day we're going to train until we get to that standard. And the more often the leader, like you're saying with your daughter, the more often the dad or the household or the head football coach or who the leader of the company, the CEO of the company, if his actions are that way, so often other people's actions are going to start leaning that way as well. And I benefit my dad for how I'm able to do it now. Now, his cuss word, and I actually had one of his former players called me yesterday about his son. My dad's favorite word was piss.
Oh,
so
piss.
Any negative word that you can say and imagine, he would substitute that word. That was his one word.
Yep.
And he got mad. And if that's the worst you can get, then oh well. So
yeah.
Really, my raisins really what helped me to be the way I am.
No, that's good. He is Brent Dierman from North Alabama. My last question, Coach, thanks so much for the time. Really just centers around gratitude. What are you thankful for? There's so much to be thankful for in our lives, and you've expressed that certainly in our conversation, but what are you most thankful for right now?
My upbringing, my parents, by the way they raised me. I know something that I got to send the lights back on. Oh, there we go.
People who watch this are going to get a kick out of it because a lot of people are going to listen, but some are going to watch and they're going to be like, why is Brent like flashing his hands? It's because the lights go off and on. So there you go.
You got motion sensor lights. Got to save money, you know.
That's right.
But some people that don't get the credit that they deserve in this business is coaches' wives. And people don't understand that a coach's wife is different than a normal wife with the amount of time. They're a widow for 5-6 months out of the year sometimes.
Yeah.
Where I'm getting home, I don't get to go to church on Sunday sometimes in season. I get home on Sunday nights at midnight, on Monday nights at midnight, on Tuesday nights at 11. And my wife is everything at my house so often. So the only time I get to see them is when they do come to practice or when they do bring me dinner on a Tuesday night. So I'm so thankful for my wife. And what she does for us at our household and in all things. I've been thankful for the journey, like we talked about, the journey the Lord's brought me in there's so often of things that I do on a daily basis that I look back as a high school OC at 25 years old, where I was painting lines every Sunday. I was cutting grass on that Kubota tractor on Sunday. I was the head strength coach essentially at the program. I was painting the weight room that I'm not afraid to go get the laundry and take it downstairs. I'm not afraid to make my own copies. Where I've worked for guys that they never at that level. They never had to do those things. So I just am so thankful for the journeys that the Lord has brought me on. And I fight the entitlement every day because of the journey the Lord's brought me on, and I'm thankful for Him.
That's good stuff. He is Brent Dierman. Hey, thank you so much. It just sounds so much when you talk like you know that your calling is to be a coach and this is your mission field. And it's just wonderful to hear. I love talking to you and hopefully we'll do it again very soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on today.
And many thanks to Brent Dearman for being our guest today on Sports Spectrum. I just really appreciate his heart for the gospel, his love for coaching not only his players, but his staff as well, the intentionality on how he coaches. And if I had a son who was being recruited to play college football, whether it's high school football, going to college, or even in the transfer protocol, if Brent Dearman gave me a call about my son or gave my son a call, I would have zero problem with my kid playing for Brent Dearman. Love hearing his heart for Jesus, but also his competitiveness. Like, he wants to win, and the idea of growing and being a part of just a team that's on a growth track. Just loved what I heard from Brent Dearman, and so thankful that he joined us today on Sports Spectrum. We thank you for tuning in to today's show. You can find us at our website, sportsspectrum.com. That has all of our content. And whatever app you're listening to this podcast on, particularly on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or even Amazon or wherever you might be listening, make sure you click that subscribe button or that follow button so that you don't miss any episodes like today's with Brent Dearman. And I'm not sure if you've been paying attention, but a lot of our episodes now have been video episodes on places like Spotify and YouTube. So you can watch our conversations and not just listen, if you so desire, with people like Brent Dearman from North Alabama. So if you're on YouTube or if you're on Spotify, the video podcasts are now a regular occurrence on Sports Spectrum's podcast in 2024. So we appreciate you tuning in. Could you do us all another favor? One quick favor, real easy, real quick. Just let somebody know about Sports Spectrum. Tell them, send them this interview. If you coach at the high school level or even levels below that, send them this conversation with Brent Dearman. There was a lot of good nuggets from him, but just send it to someone or tell someone about Sports Spectrum. It helps get the word out, and it's the best thing that you can do to be an ambassador for us as we continue to be ambassadors for Jesus. We love you guys. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time right here on Sports Spectrum. Have a great rest of your day.